I mean, I've studied Torah since I was a kid, and I will find things that I'm like, what? Does it really say that? And I have to go look it up.
Uh-huh.
And there'll be something new in it, or I'll be seeing it with new eyes. It mm-hmm. may be the same, but I'm different reading it this year. And so there's that beauty, too, of that, the permanence of the teachings. Not all of them, which I agree with. Mm-hmm. There are some things that, to me, are really a struggle to read, really a struggle in the sacred texts. But it's our job to struggle with it and come out on the other side with something good to teach out of it.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn. Welcome to In Good Faith. This is number 3 in our 7-part miniseries on Interfaith Atlanta. Heather Bigley, our senior producer, is with me, and we actually got to go to Atlanta to the Interfaith Festival there.
Yeah, and we were able actually to speak with many of our guests in person. Episodes 1 and 2 were with Reverend Gerald Durley and Sherry Frank. And coming up next, we'll talk with 2 organizations that are unique to Atlanta, the Interfaith Community Initiative and the Sandwich Project.
And then we will wind it up with a panel discussion on Dr. King's letter from a Birmingham jail.
But today,
we are so pleased to bring you a conversation with someone who makes you feel like a friend from the first moment you know her, Rabbi Ellen Nemhauser.
Yes, and she's even going to sing a little bit for us.
Yep.
Rabbi Ellen Nemhauser has worked in congregation, at Jewish summer camps, and at Emory University Center for Israel Education. She's also the president of Interfaith Atlanta. She's currently the part-time rabbi of Congregation B'nai Israel in Fayetteville. But we did this interview at the Sandy Springs Synagogue, where she's actually a congregant.
And the congregation, the synagogue where we met and got to speak with her, calls themselves Or Hadash.
So I've been involved in interfaith for as long as I can remember. The congregation, again, where I grew up and where my rabbi mentored me, it was very important to him to have relationships with the local church and the mosque and also a Buddhist organization that is right there in the city. And so there was always very positive relations. I recognized, as did he. He showed us and taught us, you can do so much more. Right? Mm-hmm. You can really make a change to the city when you come together as faith groups. So they built Ontario housing for people who wouldn't otherwise be able to afford to live in the area, and breakfast clubs and things for new immigrants as a team of Christians and Jews and Muslims. So I've been involved since rabbinical school in interfaith work, a very big believer in it. For me, a house of God is a house of God as long as everybody's speaking in positive, humane terms. And so when I came to Atlanta, people recognized that this is a place where social change was, you know, this is the root or a place of social change in America,
right,
with civil rights. And so, again, working together as synagogues and churches and mosques, people really could advance and make social change happen, because from the pulpit, you have a lot of church-going people and a lot of synagogue-going people from the pulpit. When you have your leaders say, this is the right way to do things, this is the change that we need to see happen, the people are, I don't want to say convinced, but encouraged to do better, to be better. And so,
or if they make that choice, they have some backup.
Absolutely. And they have a team of people, right? So you're not the only one. So when I came to Atlanta, that was very much a part of what I wanted to be doing. Probably now it's 15 years ago, somebody needed me to fill in as the Jewish leader of a trip that was going to happen, an interfaith trip, and I said I could go. It happened to be to Niagara Falls in Toronto. I spoke the language, so there you go. And I really fell in love with it, and that's when I kind of took a more active role rather than just showing up. I got on the board, and you know, you make your way up in the board and they see your energy and they're like, oh, you should be this and you should be that. And so I loved doing programming, and then they wanted me to be president, and I said, but I'm a much better programmer than I am a politician. But I will say about this particular board and working with this group of people, everybody on the board takes an active role. Mm-hmm. We're what we call a working board. We don't just say, like, everybody contribute money and we'll make things happen. We can't do that. We're all volunteer.
I've been so impressed as I look back at footage and read about civil rights here in Atlanta, and that some of the people who marched were church people. Mm-hmm. Not all, but there were Jewish people, there were Christians who marched. Do you feel, because this is a time where there's Islamophobia, there is some increased, sadly, anti-Semitism as well, Do you feel some support coming back to the Jewish community in those situations?
Yes and no. I mean, sadly, what's happening around the world is really, you know, is really trying the foundations of a lot of our alliances. And we've seen people pull back. I will say that those with whom we have close relationships, who know me, right, know that I don't support war. I don't support killing. I don't support hostage taking. I don't support any mistreatment of other human beings. I think knowing that, they can have a conversation with me. Well, what do you think is happening here? I don't call myself a military strategist in any way, shape, or form. I want to support people living side by side in harmony, and I think it's doable. We've done it in the past. We can do it again, whether it's in the Middle East or in Sudan or parts of South America. In this very country, we can do it. And it just really takes a lot of faith and a lot of work and a lot of honesty and the desire to leave a legacy for our children, which is to allow them all to thrive. Yeah. Not just some, but all.
Here in Atlanta specifically, are there particular challenges for interfaith work or just for people of faith or Jewish folks in general?
Well, numbers-wise, there are challenges because we have, you know, there's smaller groups and even smaller groups. Interfaith Atlanta is very committed to not just representing the three Abrahamic faiths, mm-hmm, which are the most known, if you will, because we have people who are Sikh. For the Sikh community, we have a substantial Sikh community. We have a Hindu community. Mm-hmm. We have Buddhist communities, plural. And we have, you know, many different Christian communities and different streams of Judaism. And we want all of those communities to feel like they're part of the fabric of Greater Atlanta. And so leaving any particular group out because they're not an Abrahamic faith doesn't make sense to us.
Right.
I think the challenges are probably the same as any other city. Sometimes the loudest voices aren't the most positive voices. There are challenges when there are mega churches or mega synagogues, mega mosques, and these other communities can't sort of show up in the same numbers or the same strength. But I do feel that there's good relationships between the communities in general. This past year has been trying, particularly for the Jewish community, I think, and people who find there's the intersectional identities that align them with one politic or another or one belief or another regarding the war in the Middle East.
Yeah. On just a congregational level, when you get to serve people as their rabbi, how do you feel God moving or working in that relationship where you get to serve people like that?
That's such a sweet question. We talk about that. We clergy talk about that. Like, are you really able to pray when you're up there praying mm-hmm. on behalf of others? And yes and no. Sometimes I'm thinking, why'd those people leave?
What did I say?
What did I say? Exactly. Or is that person smiling or grimacing? You know, no. But in general, I've always promised myself, and I've not been a full-time pulpit rabbi for quite some time, but I always promised myself I'd never serve a community that I didn't want to be a member of. Right? That, I don't want to.
Wow, yeah, that's a great principle.
They need to be my community. So mm-hmm. They know it. I love the Fayetteville community. It's a second job that I love because I really believe these are people who care deeply about one another. I've seen with my own eyes and felt in my heart the way in which they care for one another. They really are a family to one another. They welcome, and a newcomer comes and they become immediately embraced as a member of the congregation. And that's something to behold in such a small place without a full-time presence of
right.
clergy. So am I able to pray when I'm there? Yeah, I really feel like in touch with what the prayer is saying or what it's trying to convey, and I'm moved by it. I'm really moved, and they're like a really great sing-along congregation. There's nothing worse than when you're... I've substituted in places where I'm like the only one singing, and I'm, oh no, this is it, it's my big solo. But I like, you know, I like everyone, whether they're in tune or not, just to participate, so yeah.
Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay.
Do you have a favorite passage or something that is like a touchstone for you that you could share with us?
It's easier in Hebrew, right?
Please,
Adonai, open up my lips and let me praise you. That's sort of one of them, but the other one is Yihayu liratzoni mrefi, and it's like, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be acceptable to you, Adonai. It's really just, to me, it's just such a beautiful thing to say, I'm trying my best, and what comes out of my mouth and what mostly comes out of my heart, may it be what's acceptable. It's the real me, right? This is who I am, and may that be acceptable. And I think it's just such a beautiful passage. I don't even know where the tune came from, because I know a lot of different, there's a lot of passages through the ages have been set to music, and I don't know where this particular one came, but the one that I grew up with is such a haunting, beautiful thing.
Will you sing it for us?
Sure. Iheyu liratzon imreifi vehegion libi lefanecha Adonai tzuri vegoali Iheyu liratzon imreifi.
Oh, that is haunting.
This is so pretty.
Tell me the meaning again.
It comes at the end of silent prayer. So we all, you know, we take a moment for silent prayer, and then that's what we end with. There's another prayer that you could do, but that's the one that we always did when I was growing up. So I just love it. Yihiyu liratzon imreifi. So here they translate it. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be acceptable to you, Adonai. It's a name for God in Hebrew, Adonai, my rock and my redeemer.
You're listening to In Good Faith. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. We'll be back in a moment. If you're like me, you want to stay informed, even about some of the tough topics that have to be discussed. But so much of the discussion just really doesn't move anything forward or generate light as much as heat. That's where Top of Mind comes in, a BYU original podcast. They understand how polarizing those kind of conversations can be, and they want to help us engage in that challenge while actually learning something. Their goal is developing empathy for others. Top of Mind can help you clarify your own views, become an effective advocate for the things you care about, and even challenge your way of thinking so you can become a better citizen, a kinder neighbor. Listen to Top of Mind now on the BYU Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome back to In Good Faith, where I'm speaking with Rabbi Ellen Nemhauser from Atlanta, the president of Interfaith Atlanta.
So this is the congregation where I'm a member in Sandy Springs. I live about a mile away from here, and it's called Congregation Or Chadash, which means in Hebrew, congregation or gathering of, it's new light. Or Chadash, it's a biblical reference, and it comes to our prayer books, and we say it daily in our prayers that a new light will shine on Zion.
Oh, a beautiful name for the congregation. Would you be surprised to think of young you, 10 years old, 12 years old, whenever you did bat mitzvah, that someday you would be a rabbi and that you would be the head of an interfaith organization?
Not exactly, because I'll tell you, not everyone knows this about me, but I didn't find my way into Judaism or a synagogue until my best friend's mom, who's Catholic, said, you need to introduce her to her religion because she loves being in church way too much. Because I would go with my friend. I would go with my friend to church, and she, of course, would sit backwards in the pew eating M&Ms or whatever, and I was just, I had the hymnal open, and I was singing to the Lord, and I loved it. So I had, my early start was really not in Judaism, and then when that family said to my parents, you know, you really should at least introduce her to Judaism. My parents had fallen away from being in synagogue congregational life. And I came in and I was like a fish out of water. So I loved it. But because of that start, I never had any fear or aversion of going to another faith group because I just, to me, it was beautiful. People singing, people praying, people trying to be their best selves. I mean, what
that would feel familiar.
Yeah, it was just perfect. So I loved it.
Well, I love your parents for doing that. And also, we have this memorial wall here where people who've been associated with the congregation are remembered. Mm-hmm. And we stopped for a moment and you put a stone to remember your father on his.
That he was never this congregation. He actually is originally from Melbourne, Australia, and made his way to traveling in Europe, met my mom in Denmark. So they were first married there and then immigrated to Canada. I was born in Canada. And so the first congregation that my parents actually helped found was in a city adjacent to Toronto. and we became very involved in that congregation. That rabbi that was there, he actually came to us as a student, as an intern, and then he came to us full-time when he was ordained, and he really mentored me and really saw in me the desire to sing, to be a part of teaching. I tutored bar and bat mitzvah students after mine, you know, I loved it, and pointed me toward rabbinical school. First, I went to music school. I did my undergraduate degree in music and then went postgraduate. So my parents, though they visited here a lot when they came to visit us, they were never members. They didn't live in Atlanta, but my dad would love being in synagogue, and the people who were here loved having him in synagogue participating. So it seemed appropriate to put a memorial for him.
Was it being a rabbi that brought you to Atlanta?
Nope. I started my rabbinate in New York, working for the same organization I work for now, and married my husband when I was living in New York. He's an MD, and he subspecialized. We moved to Philadelphia and then got recruited to the Centers for Disease Control. So that took us to Cincinnati for 6 years, and then they brought him to the mothership here in Atlanta. And my role as a rabbi has not been exclusively congregational, so it was easy for me to make these moves working in organizations, especially as things went remote. We have 4 campuses of the rabbinic seminary that I went to, and for 6 years in Cincinnati, I worked for that seminary and took my job with me, because even though I was on the campus in Cincinnati, there's a campus in New York and a campus in LA and one in Jerusalem. That means you can be anywhere and do your job.
You know, I've gone to the Shrine of the Scroll with the Dead Sea Scrolls in Israel, and it was remarkable to me that our guide could hold up his 8-year-old son and read the original Isaiah about as far back as we have, and that the language has stayed the same, that tradition. What does it feel like to you? Obviously, you can translate a prayer into English, but when you give the Psalms or whatever you might be sharing from the Torah in Hebrew, is there some connection you feel to that history?
Oh, for sure. It's a revived language. Mm-hmm. So it was out of commission for centuries since the expulsion from Jerusalem in 70 of AD. The language had already fallen out of place, really, other than Hebrew for reading text and reading prayers. So studying...
But daily spoken
right,
was
daily
not.
Daily spoken, it really was not. It
That's
was really
why we
revived.
Have Yiddish and Ladino.
And about 30 other, if you can imagine. They keep uncovering new ones.
Wow.
Yeah, it's fascinating. The spoken Hebrew kind of fell out of fashion until Jewish people started making their way back to Jerusalem, or back then Palestine. And so the language was revived and has become a modern language. And there's actually something called the Academy of Hebrew Language, because there's words that we don't have from the Bible that we have to invent, right?
Perhaps internet,
microwave oven, you know, spark plugs, I don't know. So, and it's fascinating. It's a fascinating institute where they sit around thinking about what should the word be.
Right.
And they try to keep some germ of making sense in Hebrew. So the word for computer, for instance, is kind of like thinking machine. Machshav. It's not, although some people would say computer, or laptop with an Hebrew accent. But the actual word for that was accepted by the Academy was like a thinking machine.
Oh.
Yeah, because thinking we have in the Bible.
Maybe you've addressed some of this already, but what brings you the most joy in your faith?
I am overcommitted and overbusy and try to do too much, super everything, you know, and then finding out that you don't succeed at everything when you're trying to do everything. But I think the regularity of times and seasons, like, it brings me great joy to come on Sabbath on Friday afternoon, Friday evening, early evening, making challah bread. You know, I bake bread every Friday, and we make a nice dinner. Even if it's simple, it'll still be like a pretty table and candles that we light for the Sabbath. There's something about knowing that's coming on Friday every week. Some people will ask, you know, what's the most important Jewish holiday? Oh, it must be Yom Kippur, the fast day. It must be Rosh Hashanah, the new year. It must be Passover. It's the Sabbath. It happens every week. If you don't get it exactly right, you get another chance 6-7 days later. Oh. But I think it's the Sabbath. And there is a philosopher, teacher of 19th century, 20th century, who said, his name was Achad Ha'am, more than Israel, meaning the Jewish people, Am Yisrael, the people of Israel, more than the people of Israel have kept the Sabbath have kept the people of Israel.
Ah.
you know, in the sense that if it weren't for that every single week happening, we may have just like, you know, if you only came once a year, well, we all know that, right, in our faith. So if you only come once a year, it's really hard to hang on to adherence.
And that's not just at synagogue, that's in the home.
That's in the home.
Yeah.
And I say it, actually, when I teach it, I say, and I'll be honest that more than my marriage has kept the Sabbath has kept my marriage. Because again, every week, doesn't matter what goes on, how crazy it's been, mm-hmm. my husband's been on call or dealing with disease in at the CDC, and I've been running off to here, there, and the kids have been, you know, we're mm-hmm. all coming together on Friday night. That keeps your family. So to me, that's the probably the most precious thing about my faith is the obligations or the beauty, both the responsibility yeah. and the beauty of keeping these times and seasons and taking them seriously. Also this idea that there's this also a teaching, turn it and turn it again for everything's in it. That was one of the Talmudic rabbis who mm-hmm. said about Torah, turn it and turn it again because everything's in it. I mean, I've studied Torah since I was a kid, and I will find things that I'm like, what? Does it really say that? And I have to go look it up.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of words, right? And there'll be something new in it, or I'll be seeing it with new eyes.
Because of your life experience.
Exactly. I'm different. It mm-hmm. may be the same, but I'm different reading it this year. And so there's that beauty, too, of that, the permanence of the teachings. Not all of them, which I agree with. Mm-hmm. There are some things that, to me, are really a struggle to read, really a struggle in the sacred texts. But it's our job to struggle with it and come out on the other side with something good to teach out of it, right?
So speaking of Shabbat, mm-hmm. we read somewhere that you like to experiment on unsuspecting Sabbath guests with new recipes.
I love cooking. I know. I had a classmate who we used to joke, they misunderstood us when we said we wanted to serve the Jewish people. They thought we meant rabbis. No, we meant to serve the Jewish people.
Here's your meal.
Exactly. So we joke about that. But I do love to cook. And mm-hmm. I think food is speaking even in the interfaith world, like food is a beautiful reason and platform for coming together. All of us have sort of those traditional foods. And I think it's a beautiful platform for having deep and meaningful relationships and conversations. Mm-hmm. Also in Judaism, when the temple was destroyed in 70 of the Common Era, the rabbis of the time, the sages of the time, said we need to make our temple, it's going to now be in our homes. We may have gathering places that are synagogues, but our dining table is our mikdash me'at. It is our altar, mm-hmm. is a small altar. So each of our dining room tables or kitchen tables where we eat is our offering places to God. And so I love that
That's
concept.
Beautiful.
Yeah, that bringing people around the table. And so it's been a big part of my interfaith goal as well to yeah. bring people to my table. So this year for Hanukkah, I had different faith partners in coming for each night of Hanukkah to light candles with us, to eat Hanukkah foods and hang out. But I've also been the recipient also of some beautiful interfaith meals, mm-hmm. which I think is a beautiful platform again for hospitality is in all of our faiths.
So yeah.
That we can agree on.
Rabbi Nemhauser, what a pleasure. Is there something I should ask I don't know to ask?
For all the things that it says in our sacred texts, for all the things that we study, mm-hmm. for all the words that are important to us, that are our credos and so forth, in Judaism, and I think this is true of all of our faiths, it is repeated more often than any other term or phrase in the Bible is to love your neighbor as yourself, to be kind to the stranger, to never oppress the stranger, as in the foreigner.
Mm-hmm.
And so that really speaks to me, and I think it speaks to all of our faiths. And when we come together, we're not all the same. And that's yeah. not the point of interfaith relationships, is to say we all believe the same thing, we all do the same thing. But what our common humanity, it needs to be lifted up in each of our faiths, and it is there. If we hold on to that and really believe that, then I think the way forward is going to be a whole lot gentler on everybody and every generation.
We're so grateful to Rabbi Ellen Nemhauser for speaking with us. This episode was produced by Heather Bigley. Our production team also includes Aaliyah Ebert, Katarita Martinich, and James Sturtevant. Our post-production sound designers are Ashton Parkinson and Lauren Sandberg. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. If interfaith understanding is important to you, be sure and share one of these episodes in this series. And be sure you leave a comment or review on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. We're on Twitter at InGoodFaithPod, Instagram and Facebook at InGoodFaithPodcast. Our YouTube address is youtube.com/@in-good-faith, and you can see videos of these very people we heard from today. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you join us again soon, right here in Good Faith. We speak every week with people of different religious traditions and faiths. They don't all agree, but we find the commonalities and we are inspired by their search and their journey. I want to recommend another BYU podcast I think you're going to like. It's Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us. It's brand new. There's video as well as audio. And if you want to learn how to engage with others on important topics, but maybe you don't know how, or you've just had it with social media and people arguing and demonizing each other, check out Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us. There's a new one every Wednesday. You can listen or watch on the BYU Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.